In her new book, My Own Alphabet, writer Bobby Louise Hawkins arranges her stories, poems, and essays under letter headings. According to the way she sees things, A is for attitude and aging, while D is for death, dying, and domestic nirvana, and H is for heartbreak. During the early 80s, Hawkins toured with performers Terry Gartwaith and Rosalie Sorrells in concerts of folk music and storytelling. Hawkins currently teaches writing at the Naropa Institute in Boulder, Colorado. I asked her to turn to the letter S in My Own Alphabet and read the story Silver Shoes.
People who live alone do what they want to do at any time of the day or night, without thought for anyone else, particularly not for persons who might disapprove and therefore stop them. So thought she who took the orange box down from a shelf in the closet late at night and put on her new shoes. They were lightweight loafers, shiny silver. They had cost her $5 on sale, marked down from $21.95. It was a hot night, the last of July, and she was visiting her mother, but would leave in 3 days. She was lying on cotton and polyester sheets printed blue and green and pink plaid. Except for the shoes, she was completely naked. Lying and reading a book, she had remembered the shoes she had bought 2 days earlier. She put them on, thinking she couldn't have done it. If she had still been with a husband she had been married to for 18 years, who had married a woman who was 27. He would have had attitudes about it, including the attitude that anything he thought about anything she did mattered as much as anything she thought about it. To be truthful, he would have believed that what he thought about her actions mattered more than what she thought about them. Unfair. But that wasn't quite the word. More than unfair, it was untrue. She continued to be puzzled about it, that he had believed himself to be so inherently preemptive. It had confused and distressed her when they were together. Now that they weren't together, it puzzled her when she thought about it, as now. She would never resolve it in her mind. But now, living alone, and all that adjusting gone through and done with, she thought it might be ideal to not be growing old alongside a man who would have had attitudes about it whenever it caught his eye. It was better to be alone and naked on a bed late at night in silver shoes.
What inspired that story?
That? Well, I had the silver shoes. I was visiting my mother. I was lying on this plaid set of sheets. The thought came to me, and it seemed to me an interesting enough thought to deserve writing down.
This, I guess, is a fairly autobiographical piece about having been married to someone for 24 years who married a woman who was 27. Do you find yourself resenting men who marry women much younger than them?
Oh, it's such a commonplace. If one put much energy into resenting it, it would take up all one's time. I find myself feeling many different ways about it. It's not, obviously, the issue of my own life. I mean, It is apparently as a feminist theme almost. There's a place there for resentment in that somehow the general projection of what a man is and how a man continues is that a man can then constantly have this option and that women do not. I think there are other things than that. It somehow has been given men as if it were a privilege that they could marry someone younger. I've had relationships with younger men, and what was interesting in them to me, or what was almost a joke, and what I'll be writing about actually at one time, I mean in one of these next books I have projected, is that when I was married to, living with a younger man, one of the things that became patently clear was that he was asking of me the same kind of thing that younger women ask of older men, namely, he wanted it clear that I admired his mind as well as his body, etc. these things are apparently ageist more than they are sexist. I mean, that's simply the desire for a dignity within the relationship.
In one of your stories in here, you talk about the anguish that you used to have about collecting family stories and telling them, that you were self-conscious, you didn't want to make your family sound like they spoke in a Hollywood hillbilly dialect.
Right.
Is that how you started, by collecting stories that you'd heard friends and family tell?
Well, I grew up in Texas, and in Texas there's a heavy farm talking culture. Coming out of that, I was a very standard and usual kind of adolescent snob. That is, since I was getting language from the reading I was doing, my assumption was that my Texas relatives were, that I could collect their stories but improve on them, and in fact, when I started actually listening to them, they were honed right down to the nub. The advantage of a talking culture, of course, is that you're looking in someone's eyes, and as you know, when you're talking to someone and you're giving them a long story, you see the eyes glaze and you immediately start editing.
Right.
And it's so that for people who come out of a talking culture, when they realize that they can hark back to that talking culture and use that as an editorial principle, it saves them a few years of anguish.
I'd like for you to read something short from your new book called Spouses of Writers.
Chamfort said, Diderot used to say that a writer may have a mistress who fashions books, but must have a wife who fashions shirts. I could come up with endless variations on the theme of what a writer's husband should be.
I'll ask you for an example.
I beg your pardon?
I'll ask you for an example of what kind of what kind of writer's husband,
well,
you'd like to
see. The principal thing, it seems to me, is a man who's capable of being delighted by it when his wife's at work. I lived for years with a writer, and when he was working, I adored it. First of all, I really liked his work. Obviously, a writer is going to have a very hard time, male or female, if they're living with someone who doesn't actually care for their work. Otherwise, you're in constant collision, that place where you want to write and that place where you're a loving person with a person who matters terribly to you. Ideally, you want someone who cares for your work as you do and who is pleased when you're working rather than thinking of it as time somehow being taken from them.
Have you ever found a relationship like that?
No, I haven't. I see other people have it, though, so that I know it is possible. It just isn't my own personal history.
You were married for a while to the poet Robert Creeley. Were you writing at the time of that marriage?
No, I wasn't. Not until the relationship ended.
When you were with Creeley, and I know he wrote some poems about you, and I was wondering what the experience was like of reading poems about you, and if you were surprised seeing the way he wrote about you. If you were surprised at things he saw in you, or the way
he
described
you? Well, it is a hard question to answer. Purely and simply, when he wrote wonderful poems about me in which he implied that I was wonderful, I liked it. When he wrote awful poems about me implying that I was awful, I didn't like it. The dilemma with being written about is simply that one finds oneself in the public mouth, and that's not so charming, but equally there's a kind of dilemma in being with someone famous when one goes out and one sees that people adore oneself because one is some kind of, because of one's attachment.
Mm-hmm. Can you read us Vicious Valentine?
Certainly. Incidentally, this was not Creeley. This was someone quite different. Here I sit, all broken-hearted, loved a twit, but now we've parted. The present's grim, the future's brighter. He shouldn't have done it to a writer.
Did you get even by writing about this person?
Oh, one doesn't get even ever. I mean, that isn't even the issue. The issue is that one lives a life and that one's life provides kinds of material, apropos where it is that one's mind's a functioning, sensual part of one's being. In fact, it seems to me that having vengeance as a focus for writing a book has produced a spate of really terrible books. I mean, badly written books. Vengeance just doesn't work. It tends to throw the thing out of torque. It misshapes.
What occasioned you to write Vicious Valentine?
Oh, I'd had a romance which had spiraled into an absurdity, and I was absolutely irritated at this person, and I wrote that as because I was actually delighted that there could be that statement with what I felt was a sense of humor in it.